Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2017. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melita Dennett. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is Monday's Brighton Festival special. We're live Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeat to 10 o'clock and 8am. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen. Today, we're going to be hearing from Kate Tempest. She's this year's guest artistic director of the Brighton Festival. We'll be finding out about dance and music performances during May. We'll be looking back at Saturday's children's parade, which kicked off the festival in style, and hearing about a children's show with just three words in it. That's in the next hour here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. So let's start now by turning the clock back to the Brighton Festival launch earlier this year with guest artistic director, spoken word performer, Kate Tempest. Previous guest directors have included Brian Eno and Laurie Anderson, and this year Tempest's aims are to bring the arts to a wider audience. This year the festival includes large-scale outdoor events, work created by homeless people and performances at Hangleton and Whitehawk. Kate Tempest spoke by Skype from Sri Lanka at the launch, and naturally I was there.
I got my hand on my heart, but my heart's in the gutter, talking to itself, starting to flutter when it thinks about yours, barking at my...
I believe the arts are the most important cultivators of empathy that we have at our disposal. This year's theme, Everyday Epic, seems to encapsulate some of my feelings about how music, literature and poetry can give us back our lives.
I'm Andrew Comben, I'm Chief Executive of Brighton Dome and Brighton Festival.
Kate Tempest is an interesting choice in an interesting political time. She's very much into the idea of art being for everyone. How do you see that fitting in with what the festival's doing this year?
I think that's right. It is a particularly precarious time, isn't it, socially and politically. And we really worked hard with Kate. Kate challenged us to make this festival even more relevant to everyone in the city than it might have been in previous years. And so we've worked hard to reach areas of the community that we don't often touch. We're initiating a thing called Your Place this year, two community hubs in Whitehawk and Hangleton and Knoll, to really develop a festival for and by the community, including festival artists. But rather than just parachute the festival in, where we're working alongside people in the city to develop a festival for them. And Kate's cry is to walk in other people's shoes this year, and we really think this programme helps us do that.
Well, I thought that there was something to be said for trying to open up the spaces where the works get performed. I think in all my years of performance, the thing that excites me so much is what happens when you are in an unexpected place, or when you're in a place that challenges you as a performer or challenges you as an audience member. Something very live happens in those situations. And I had lots of ideas about how to try and bring some of that into play.
Picture the scene. A boy of 15 with the usual dreams and the usual routine. He is heading to school with a dullness inside. Born of desires left unsatisfied. Now, is he stifled? Or is he just learning the ways of his time? Give him limbs that are awkward but know how to climb. Give him a gait that you know. Give him hopes. His days are so painfully slow, but he copes.
Kate Tempest is a bold choice. She's not going to be to everybody's taste, but do you think she'll bring in a wider and a younger audience?
I think wider and younger audience, certainly. But what I love about Kate is that she can speak to everyone. You might think she's a young rapper, but she has an amazing mind that ranges across all art forms and breadth of thought. She really is something for everyone, and she's a very exciting artist, a very exciting new voice, and someone that can speak to people in different ways.
It requires no qualifications, no training to enjoy it. It's truthful communication between humans about humanity. And in these times, it feels more important than ever to try and understand what that humanity is and what it could be.
Setting the scene there with a look back at the launch of the Brighton Festival earlier this year, and we'll be hearing more from Kate Tempest in the programme later on. You listen to the Radio Riva Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett. We're going to be here Monday to Friday throughout the whole of the festival, live between 5 and 6, then repeated 10 o'clock the same night, 8 a.m. the next day, and a Saturday morning best of show. We're going to also be looking back at the Children's Parade, which, as tradition has it, always opens the festival. First of all, here's some music from Brighton. This is New Tropics. That's Brighton's New Tropics. You listen to Radio Riva, the Brighton Festival show. And as ever, the Children's Parade kicked off the festival this year with thousands of children from local schools taking to the streets, along with drummers and samba bands. This year, the theme was Poetry in Motion, and Radio Reverb's reporters Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson were there.
I'm Holly Simpson and today I'm at Brighton Festival. I'm currently at the Child's Parade and there are already so many people here. People waving banners, groups of kids dressed up in their costumes. It looks so great and I honestly can't wait to go find out what other people are thinking of it as well. What brings you to the Brighton Festival today?
It's such a fantastic event to watch all the children and lots of happiness and sunshine.
Do you know any of the children in the parade?
Yes, two of my children in the parade.
Are they dressed up in costumes for the parade?
They are. They made it themselves as well. They dressed up as sweets.
How would you describe the atmosphere for the parade?
Yeah, really good, really palpable, really exciting, full of energy, full of music. It's a real good sense of community.
It's general Brightonian, isn't it, really? It's all quite friendly and happy and jolly and everyone's smiling and it's what you want from Brighton, really.
Can you explain to me your outfit? Because it looks incredible.
Yeah, lots of people say that. Well, it's my daily contribution to life. I love dressing up in colours. So it's the child in me.
We've dressed ourselves and made our own costumes. It was a Midsummer's Night Dream theme, so we had fauns and fairies. Two girls in our family were supposed to be the fairies, hence the wings. And we had the two fauns the boys were dressed in, as fauns.
Oh, great sense of atmosphere there in the Brighton Festival. And I have to say thank you very much to our two reporters, Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson, who join us now. Your very first Brighton Festival.
I know. We were actually very surprised. We knew there was going to be a lot of people there, but not as many as there actually were there.
Right.
It was so insane. It was so cool, though. I loved it.
There were so many people wearing different costumes, and I felt a bit out of place because I wasn't wearing a costume. I feel like we should have glittered our faces at least.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was so impressed, with the music. It was just, the atmosphere was incredible. It was crazy.
Excellent. And obviously you were meeting a lot of people there, and you must have seen some great costumes as well.
Yeah, there was one lady there. Like, she came all the way from London, and she didn't even know anything about it, but she was just dressed for it anyway. She was like, I love this.
Yeah,
I literally fit in.
Little doilies in her hair that she'd made. She'd crocheted them herself and she was wearing them. And she looked incredible, didn't she?
Excellent, excellent. And how about the rest of the atmosphere over the course of the weekend? Because you're not actually from Brighton. You're University of Brighton students from Hastings. So it's a bit of a baptism of fire, spending a weekend in Brighton with the festival all around you. How was the atmosphere for you for the rest of the weekend?
It was just insane. Like, everyone was happy, everyone was upbeat, the atmosphere was incredible, just everything.
Everyone we spoke to, they were so into it, which I loved so much, and I can't believe we hadn't heard of it before literally it started on Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be reporting over the rest of the festival for us, so I hope you'll find some exciting things to go to. We are going to be having a chat with you later on because you've been to Fabrica to see Onlar, which is a very powerful and moving exhibition. So we'll also be hearing another of your reports from the Children's Parade. So Holly and Alicia, thank you very much, and we'll hear from you in two ticks.
Thank you.
Cheers. First of all, here's some more music from Brighton. This is Our Girl, and the track is Being Around. So much great music coming out of Brighton. That is Brighton's Our Girl. You're listening to the Brighton Festival special on Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb, I'm putting my teeth in the right way around so I can say the next bit. Jeremy Hartleby and Oglemore. I got it right. Jeremy Hartleby and Oglemore is a three-handed show for children, which runs today and tomorrow at the Theatre Royal. It's unusual in that the only three words spoken are the names of the characters who tell their story through clowning, music and play. Brighton director, writer and performer Tim Crouch is directing the show, and he's also contributed to Five Short Blasts that was originally scheduled for Shoreham Harbour but has been moved at the last minute to Brighton Marina.
Jeremy Hartleby Oglemore. Oglemore, Jeremy. Jeremy Hartleby Jeremy. Jeremy Hartleby, Uglemore, Jeremy.
My name is Tim Crouch, and I'm the director of a piece called Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore, which is at the Theatre Royal, opens today, this afternoon.
Now, that is a most splendid title, and it's also the three words of the show. Tell me about that.
Well, it's the conceit of a brilliant playwright called Gary Owen, who wrote a sketch, kind of, many years ago, which was called Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore, that just had three characters who only ever spoke those three words. Partly because he was trying to explore the idea of subtext, the things that are said underneath the words. So he was told to restrict his vocabulary. And then we took that sketch and we expanded it to a nice 55 minutes, where we still kept the conceit that there are three characters, Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore, and the only words that are spoken throughout the whole piece are the words Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore. Huge emotions are explored. Narrative is it's a delicious, funny clown show, but the only words that are spoken are Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore.
It is a children's show, although I suspect it will have different layers to it, but I guess within that kind of context you can allow your imagination and surreality to run riot.
Yeah, so I can't even talk about the show without just a big grin on my face and a warm feeling suffusing my body. It's great for young people. It's particularly good for, like, 3- and 4-year-olds, but I'd say it's probably even better for jaded, middle-aged people who just need some joy in their lives. Because, you know, because of the restriction, because of the minimalism, because there is so much space given to us, the audience, to fill the spaces, and because there is such an innocence, I suppose, by restricting that language, that you bring to it what you need to bring to it, and you get from it what you want, what you need to get from it. So we have had adult performances in the Unicorn Theatre, which is where the show began, that have just been overbrimming with delirium, really. And the same with young kids. It's just come from a 2-week run in Dublin, and a beautiful children's theatre in Dublin, and to see a packed house of little ones, toddlers even, and their mums and their dads, and people who've come for no reason other than they like the idea of the show, all sort of mixing with these three exquisite clowns who work with us and work with each other. It's been a show, we call it an antidepressant. It's like a theatrical antidepressant, because you might be feeling a little bit sad and tired. You come and see Jeremy Hartleby and Uglemore and you go with your heart slightly expanded.
You're no stranger to the Brighton Festival. You've performed, directed, written for the festival for many years. What's the importance of the festival to you?
May time in Brighton is the best month of the year, I think, because, you know, the horse chestnuts are in blossom, because the sea is beginning to get warmer and you can just about bear being in it for a little longer than a second. And then there is the most outstanding international sort of compot of art in my city, my little city. It's not a big place, Brighton. And you can't walk down the street without bumping into something, even if it's an open house, you know. Public spaces get transformed, things that aren't theatres become theatres, and then that's the fringe is just growing and growing like Topsy, and then you have the festival itself, which, you know, and things like the Gabriel plays, the plays that are coming to the Attenborough Centre, that's a world-class piece of international work, and it's just down the road from me. So, you know, I know Edinburgh very well, and of course London is like a festival city all the time in terms of the amount of art, but there's something particularly special about Brighton, bordered by the sea like it is. It has a fierce identity of its own, and I feel like the Brighton Festival speaks to all the things that I love most about Brighton.
You have been very busy this festival. You've also contributed to Five Short Blasts, which was originally going to take place at Shoreham Harbour, now moved down to the Marina. What's been your part in that?
It was first made in Melbourne Harbour, and then it's been to another number of other places, and then it's come to Brighton. But every time it arrives in a place, it gets rewritten. So very, very wonderfully, we were asked, not just myself and my wife, Julia, who is a novelist. It's the first time we have ever worked together. We didn't really work together, but we were asked to contribute text, some Brighton, Brighton voices to the piece. Julia writes thrillers, psychological thrillers, and I write kind of slightly sort of strange conceptual pieces of theatre. So we kind of wrote separately, but in conversation with each other. And I've written a piece about, which references, I suppose, the events of a few years ago when there was the disaster at the air show. And Julia has written a very sort of beautifully internal domestic piece about a boat trip and a mackerel. And what Maddie and Tim, who are the Australian artists, have done is they will have combined those with sound, with music, with original, with live music as well, I think. And yes, the intention was to take a boat out from Shoreham Harbour. I'm unusual in that I quite like the marina. I have gone on fishing trips from the marina. when the sun is shining, it's okay. I hope people will come and see Five Short Blasts and get a real sense of an identity for that place as well. It is part of our place. It's changing. It's not necessarily changing in a way that I want it to change with the developments and the flats and the retail. But let's try and keep some sort of cultural heart beating in that place. And I think Five Short Blasts does that. I haven't seen it yet. I arrived from Ireland last night. I'm going back to Ireland tomorrow. I'm back in Brighton for good next week, and I will see it next week. And I can't wait to see what Maddie and Tim have done.
That was Tim Crouch. He was talking about Five Short Blasts, which has now moved to the marina from Shoreham Harbour. And he was also talking about Jeremy, Hartleby and Oglemore at the Theatre Royal, which is taking place today, if you're listening to the live show, at 6.30, then Tuesday at 2.30, 4.30 and 6.30. And tickets available from brightonfestival.org. And Tim's son, Owen, actually wrote the music for, here we go, Jeremy, Hartleby and Oglemore. I've got it. And he's also in Brighton's Kudu Blue, which is one of my favourite bands, which gives me an excuse to play Kudu Blue yet again. Oh, I love that band so much. That's Brighton's Kudu Blue and a new track from them, that's Drink Alone. And Owen Crouch from Kudu Blue has composed the music for Jeremy, Hartleby and Oglemore. I love to say it now. Taking place at the Theatre Royal today at 6.30. If you listen to the live show, then it's tomorrow 2.30, 4.30 and 6.30 again. So if you need tickets for anything for the Brighton Festival, there are often standby tickets available. And the best place to go is either the festival box office or go online at brightonfestival.org. So let's take a look at some of the dance and music events that are coming up in the Brighton Festival. The festival's Rob Jones came to Radio Reverb to cast his eye over what's in store.
There's a real range of work happening at all different scales over the month of May, from big concert hall pieces to small intimate happenings to beautiful installations that really pull apart some of the bigger questions that we're looking at as a society today. So, yeah, good stuff.
Wow, OK. Well, some people shy away from dance as being a kind of difficult art form because they're afraid they don't get it. Does it matter if you don't understand dance?
No, but I know exactly what that viewpoint means and what that's about. I used to be like that, and I think it just means you haven't seen the right thing that makes you feel a certain way. But I've always found that sometimes dance is the one art form, similar to music and being at a gig, that can really engage with an audience. I mean, we all have bodies, we all move, and we can respond to that. But I think it's just about relaxing, not thinking too much, and just seeing what's in front of you. And if you enjoy it and appreciate it, that's good enough. And the right dance can definitely do it for you, for sure.
I guess there's the idea that everything ought to have a narrative, and sometimes dance, it just is.
Yeah, same thing. Well, that's totally the case with so many art forms. But yeah, sometimes dance just is about a feeling or exploring an idea and not necessarily a linear ABC type narrative. And absolutely some do, and some in this festival absolutely do give you story, give you well-known stories, give you, you know, that meatiness if people are after that. But, you know, other parts, you know, look at life a bit differently, I guess.
And I've noticed a move in recent years towards more kind of circus related events rather than what we might understand as dance. I mean, there's some strong names returning to the festival this year which have gone down an absolute storm in previous years.
Yes. So a lot of the lines are becoming a bit more blurred between the genres, and so one of our bigger circus shows, the company Cash has returned with the show Driftwood, and it is definitely more of a departure from your conventional circus. It's still really, you know, wow, amazing big tricks, and it's very balance based and a lot of floor work and flips and aerial, but at the same time it's quite poetic in its movement. It's got a beautiful soundtrack, and the company really worked to create quite a relaxed magical world. It's a really great show. And there's also Mimbre, who are a company that I've known for a long time, who are wonderful, with a piece called If I Could I Would, and they are really family friendly. They're really I don't like the word diverse. I think it's a rubbish word, but they're good with representation with mm-hmm. all different types of performers, and they make work which has a lot of heart. That's going to be at All Saints. And yeah, those are our circus, big circus shows that are happening, but also within, oh gosh, oh, how can I say that? Circa.
I was going to say, because Cassis, I've seen before, and Cassis I absolutely love. And Circa, who did How Like an Angel,
yes,
which absolutely blew people's minds three years ago.
Huge circus show, which is going to be in the cemetery off the Lewis Road in the final weekend of the festival.
There must be some challenges to put on a circus stroke dance piece in a cemetery.
It's an amazing piece of circus, with circus theatre. It's site specific. It's got a giant participatory choir. The audience walk on this journey. You're guided through a journey, basically, through like the afterlife. You've got circus performers up in the trees. You know, they're hidden in bushes. They're doing all these amazing, incredible tricks, and it's world class. But at the same time, the people of Brighton have helped to make the show and are part of it. So it's a brilliant feat. It's actually been one of the easier outdoor shows to make happen. We were worried that there wouldn't be a cemetery that would want us in there, and the Lewis Road Cemetery would completely open armed, like, yes, please come in, do something. And we've been very respectful of the fact that it is a cemetery, and the company are brilliant and are ready to respect the space and make a good show in it. But yeah, it's going to be bespoke to Brighton, and it's going to be, yeah, a really special thing happening. And it's great this year. Each year we manage to bring work to different places in the same city and just, you know, give it a different spin.
I think that's one of the things that people love as well. So they see something in a totally different place. You would never expect to see a performance.
Completely. And it brings, also when you do that, it brings different audiences and different people that wouldn't usually want to come and see a circus show or want to sit in the Theatre Royal, but they'll go down the road and they'll go and stand in the cemetery and out of curiosity alone. And by far, it will be some of the best performance you've seen.
Now, tell me something about the Hiccup Project, because I've been looking at this and there are workshops attached to this. Can you enlighten me a little bit more about it?
So the Hiccup Project was formed by two wonderful local dancers, Christina and Chess, who are brilliant. And they are basically doing a retrospective with us in the festival. And part of that, they'll be doing a kitchen dance workshops. And the idea is just looking at accessible dance, at the idea of the dancing that you do in your kitchen, that kind of and it's about that kind of irreverent dance like no one's watching kind of movement, which is very much about just feeling good. Their work is very, very special, and it does make you feel good. And so they're looking at that in their workshops, and then also in their two pieces, It's Okay, I'm Dealing With It and May We Go Round, which have also been in the Brighton Fringe in previous years, which look at, one really looks at kind of relationships and struggling with being single, and one looks at the idea of kind of self-care and dealing with stress and the fact that life can be a bit crap at times. And they are incredibly funny, intelligent pieces of, I guess you could call them dance, but I'd call them comedy, a performance also. And the fact that it's like watching two stand-ups, you know, they've got a real vibe of like a stand-up duo, but at the same time incredibly strong dance technique, and they do dance parts in it. But they are, you know, they are really pushing the genre on and blurring the lines, and are really fun and smart, and people like them, and you definitely get a lot out of it. I really hope people come and see them. They're great.
Now, there's something else here. Swan Lake, which I suspect people normally think is done in tutus, but this looks like an altogether different affair.
Absolutely, Melita. No. potted history. There's a company that no longer exists called Fabulous Beasts, and the artistic director of that company is a choreographer called Michael Keegan Dolan, who is incredible. His aesthetic is some of the grittiest, biggest dreamlike performance I've ever seen. I'm going to use that word performance because it really does more than it's big, and it's about lots of different things. It's not just about dance. Anyway, so he has taken, and he's very well known for taking well-known stories and like classical repertoires and then turning them on the head and giving them a real kind of gritty, earthy weight, and at the same time it's very big and European and exciting. So he's taken the story of Swan Lake. He's completely reworked it and based it in basically like very much Irish folklore, and he's made it into this big multi-sensory performance piece called Loch. I can never say the proper Gaelic. Is it Gaelic? What's the
Gaelic? It looks Gaelic. Yes,
Loch,
it's Gaelic.
It's like Loch Inna Ella, and it's there are dancers who wear these big strap-on swan wings at times. There are actors who play corrupt priests and, you know, violent criminals. There are giant ladders that stretch to the ceiling.
Wow.
There's a live band called live folk band, well known, called Slowly Moving Clouds, who like orchestrate the whole piece and a backing track. There's 2 tons of feathers at the end of each show. Big shotguns.
The caretaker will love that. Aren't they? Yeah. Come to clean that
it's
up.
It's some of the biggest, most exciting performance that we'll see at the festival this year for sure. And it is in no way inaccessible. This is something which is, if you like excitement, if you like things that are beautiful, if you like to be challenged and excited, yeah, this is definitely a show for you. Yeah.
Great. So Rob, I'm going to ask you to pick out another couple then for us.
Yeah, sure. So I'm thinking about so more dance and performance. Let's talk about FK Alexander. So FK Alexander is an incredible performance artist from Glasgow, and she has this amazing piece called I Could Go On Singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's based on Judy Garland's final performance at Carnegie Hall, and basically it's kind of part sound installation, part one-on-one performance. You get given a ticket. You go in to, it's going to be at the Spire. You go into the Spire, big church, and there's a big group of, you can be in there, the audience. You stand on an X, and then the performance begins. FK Alexander, absolutely incredible performer.
Just for you?
Just for
that
you.
That sounds terrifying. No.
It's incredible. Trust me. I sat and watched this in Edinburgh for an hour, and people were crying, breaking down, and she's like a performance wizard. Like, that's the only way I can really describe it. But basically, I don't want to give too much away, but basically a one-on-one performance happens where she performs, and also there's playing over the airwaves, and there's a huge kind of soundscape happening at the same time. It's kind of like a big wall of sound. It's beautiful, really engulfing and sensory. And she holds your hand and performs this one-on-one performance of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And it's a very orchestrated, clear, controlled performance, and it happens again and again. But the whole time you as an audience member are there, she is completely focused on you, holding your hand, looking into your eyes. No, trust me. And you're completely safe. It's undivided attention, and you forget everything else. Something about that song, when you really think about the words of that song, when you really think about also Judy Garland, her life, what she'd been through, and the context of it, and what the atmosphere that it creates, something about it happening over and over again. And I've pitched this to like my festival team and everyone over and over. It really is something you have to experience, but it is an incredible experience to have. So she's going to be doing that for 3 days at the end of the festival at the Spire. It's a durational performance, which means it will go on for a long period of time, but audience members can come and go. They don't have to be there for the whole period of time it's on. And that's another incredible, brilliant one-off thing happening.
You've got time for one more.
One more. What do you want? Do you want music, or do you want another dance piece?
Go on, give us some music piece.
Music piece. I'm going to talk about Mickey Blanco.
Go on then, yeah.
Mickey Blanco,
Who is amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm so pleased that he's agreed to come to the festival this year. Mickey, I've wanted to work with Mickey for a long, long time, and this is definitely like a dream come true. Mickey is an incredible queer hip-hop artist, performer, activist, completely turns the genre on its head, and at the same time is one of the best. Collaborates with brilliant artists, is so brave, but in the same way really vulnerable. And he's coming at the end of the festival to basically give us our party night, and he's going to do a brilliant gig. And then he's also supported by 2 brilliant queer performers, Travis Alabanza, who is one of the a hot kid coming up on the scene, let's say that, and Lasana Shabazz, who's also another incredible performance artist. So that's going to be a night of music and performance. It's going to be a party. It's going to be irreverent. Can't find my words today. It's going to be irreverent
so
and exciting, and it's going to be, something to really remember. And Kate, our guest director, was really keen to get Mickey
Kate
in
Tempest,
the festival too.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's wonderful and will be there also on the night. So, yeah, should
brilliant.
Be good.
Brilliant. Well, there's so much stuff happening in the Brighton Festival this year. So, Rob Jones, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I guess pick up a festival programme, go to the website, brightonfestival.org.
Yeah, check it out.
Brilliant. Rob, thanks for joining us on Radio Reverb. Rob Jones there with the flavour of the dance and music events taking place in the Brighton Festival.
The Brighton Festival 2017. Everyday Epic.
Everyday Epic indeed. And Onlar, or They in Turkish, is a powerful video installation created by Turkish artist İpek Duben, looking at how people find themselves positioned as outsiders, even within their own society, and how we regard societies different from our own as the other. Onlar is on at Fabrica, and it takes the form of a number of video interviews positioned around a darkened room, each with its own listening point, where you hear a translation of the story being told. Well, our reporters Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson have been to see it. Can you describe a little bit more about what you experience as you walk into that gallery?
It's so, like, bizarre. Like, you walk in and it's just pitch black. And then you just have, like, these people on screens, and then you just, like, sound this little dome, and then you can hear what they're saying, and it's really quite eye-opening.
It is, yeah. I have to say, without sounding too pretentious, it was a really intimate experience for me. When I went in, it was obviously very dark and you can't see anyone else, but you can just see these projections of people talking about these really incredible, saddening stories. It was really, really cool.
There is something about it. When you first walk in, you hear a kind of a babble of voices, and it's very hard to pick the voices out. And they're talking in their own language as well. And you have to go right up to each individual video installation to hear the translation. Did you get an idea of the kind of stories that were being told?
Yeah, at first I found it quite difficult separating their language from the English as well. But yeah, I heard a woman talking about her place in Turkey, obviously, and the differences between males and females, which was obviously quite a big topic to talk about. And I really like listening to that kind of thing. It's really interesting to get an insight, obviously, because it's very different to over here. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was just so eye-opening. When I was listening to it, it kind of brought a tear to my eye,
really?
Because I was like, oh, like, I don't generally didn't know about what was going on. So there's stuff going on in Turkey, but I never really heard anything so personal and things like that, which was really nice.
And the people involved in it have actually put themselves at quite a lot of risk, because they do ask that you don't photograph at the exhibition, because if those people's faces are actually seen, then they could potentially be under threat from the Turkish regime. I mean, how well do you think it worked as a way of actually telling those stories? Because it's an unusual way to do it, you know, having it within an art exhibition as a video installation.
Mm-hmm. Well, as Holly said, it was really intimate, so obviously, because you're so, it literally is like one-on-one with these people, like, even though you don't actually know them, it's very intimate, and I just feel like you heard their stories from their point of view and not from another point of view, because sometimes you can watch things like that and you can not feel like their connection, but with that you really could.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. It's just hearing their story, their point of view, everything, yeah.
So it sounds like it comes recommended.
Definitely, yeah, 100% go check it out.
Definitely.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that, Holly and Alicia. And on tomorrow's programme, we're going to be hearing from Onlar's creator, İpek Duben, talking in more detail about the work. And They, or Onlar in Turkish, is a Fabrica gallery on the runs through to the 29th of May, and it's free entry. So now we return to Holly and Alicia's reports from the Brighton Festival, taking us back to Saturday and the opening children's parade.
We have made it to the end of the children's parade, and everyone is in such high spirits, and it's just great to see so many people enjoying themselves. Currently I can see a unicorn being carried past me, which is amazing. It's so colourful. I think the rest of the festival is going to be incredible, and this is a great start to it. What did you enjoy most about the parade?
Singing and meeting friends.
It's been brilliant. This is the first one I've been to, and I've got the two little ones, so I wasn't sure how they'd enjoy it, but they've absolutely loved it. I'll definitely be back again. And I can't believe the crowds, there's absolutely tons of people. And I can't wait to find out what else is happening around the city.
Well done.
We were Poetry in Motion, and our poem was F for Foxes by Carol Ann Duffy. I was the flag bearer, and I'm a chicken, and this is Emil, who is also a chicken, and he was in the Samba parade.
So we did We Love to Boogie, and we did F for Fox.
The atmosphere is incredibly positive and happy. It's uplifting, actually, I think. It really is, and that's what creativity does for people.
5,000 or more people in a parade, 67 schools and bands. What a parade this is.
There we go. Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson reporting there from the Brighton Festival, from the Children's Parade, opening the festival on Saturday. And big thanks as well to Thameslink Trains for supporting our reporters, Alicia and Holly. I'm going to be hearing from Kate Tempest in a few minutes' time. First of all, a local act. This is Yumi and the Weather. Ah, from Worthing. That's Yumi and the Weather. Absolutely fantastic. That's her current single, actually. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, Brighton Festival special. And spoken word performer Kate Tempest is, of course, this year's guest director of the Brighton Festival. Previous directors have included musicians Brian Eno and Laurie Anderson, artist Anish Kapoor, and even Burmese politician Aung San Suu Kyi. Well, as well as performing herself, Tempest has put a mark on this year's festival by bringing work created by local residents from outlying areas of Brighton and Hove. I met up with her to find out what the role and Brighton means to her.
Europe is lost, America lost, London lost. Still we are clamouring victory. All that is meaningless rules. We have learnt nothing.
My name's Kate Tempest. I'm here because I'm the guest director of this year's Brighton Festival.
What was the first thought when you were invited to be guest director?
I think I was pretty shocked, like, and humbled, I think is the right word. Just, it's quite an awe-inspiring task, and also because when they invite you, they give you a list of all the other people that have done it before. It's just, like, quite a surreal list to be included on, you know?
Yeah, you're in some odd company there, aren't you? You're a different choice to some of those names who have come before you. Why do you think they particularly picked you at this moment in time?
I've got no idea. You'd have to ask them.
Okay.
I hope for whatever reason, I hope I've satisfied at least some of their desire. I don't know.
Now, we are living in interesting political times, and I guess you are going to be bringing some of that to the festival as well.
Well, I think that it will be a part of the festival, because as soon as you have something cataclysmic, difficult happening in the world, then that also happens in people, especially when a big group of people gather together to experience an event, experience something bigger than themselves. The people in the room are influencing the actors on the stage or the players in a band, whatever it is. It's this feedback of kind of effect and energy change. And even if the particular people on stage are not directly referencing a current political event, it's here, it's with us, it's in the rooms with us. So of course it's going to be in people's minds, and because of that it's going to charge and recharge the words, the music, the stuff that's being said, spoken, sung, acted. And I think that it's very natural for us as human beings to turn to the theatre, the music, our musicians, our poets, to kind of help us understand or take stock of the kind of the things that feel a bit too big to hold in our heads. You know, it's a very good way of helping us to understand where we're at with things. It helps us place our fears, desires, panic in a way that is rooted in narrative structure, which is how we understand ourselves and our place in the world anyway, you know.
And there is a theme of the everyday epic. I mean, it does feel like we are living in epic times.
Yes, I agree.
So it's very appropriate.
But then I would also say that that's been the case forever, you know. That's always been the case. And that I think this, the everyday epic, refers to the hope that I have that once you have immersed yourself in somebody's story, that you come out of the environment that you watched it in and you remember that every single person that you pass by on the street is full of life and joy and pain and is worthy of your attention and your love. Like, and for me, this is what theatre, music, dance, poetry, this is what it does. It re-establishes my connection to the real, you know, and I hope that that can be the same for other audience members and people that are just like around Brighton, just feeling how it feels to just be around all this stuff going on, you know.
How much leeway were you given in the choices that you made?
Well, it's an interesting process, because I drew up a big wish list and had many, many ideas that in reality were unworkable. But what happens is that you are invited to dream big, kind of thing. And then through a process of having lots of different conversations, you realise that certain themes are emerging and certain things are possible and certain things aren't. And there's a big group, there's like at least 20 people who are all specialists within their particular strand. So, for example, I know very little about contemporary dance, but there is somebody who specialises in that and who has spent all year going to watch different pieces from all over the world and can say, well, this year this is what's incredible in this particular strand and you should check out these guys. And so I do, and it's a very collaborative experience. And guest director, you're not the curator of it, but you are asked to bring a bit of your identity to the table when you know the lineup's being decided. And I feel really proud of the programme that we've put together. You know, I've had a lot of input, but at the same time it's been truly collaborative, and yeah, lots of things in there that I'd had no idea about beforehand, you know.
One of the accusations levelled at the Brighton Festival is it can be very elitist and very Brighton central-centric. And that's not the case this year because things are happening outside of Brighton as a result of your input, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't know that was something that that was being levelled at the festival, but I did feel like when thinking about what I could possibly contribute, this was something that I think is extremely important across the board. Like, just an understanding of how difficult it is for people to travel, to get into town, to spend money on transport, to have access to childcare, like these things that for some reason people just do not seem to think that this is an issue for people. Like, and I, in my head and heart, I was from the beginning very excited about this idea of including just a bit more than the very, you know, buzzy centre of town in this incredible festival that comes here. And I just wanted it to be a bit more open. So these community centres in Whitehawk and Hangleton are, for me, such an exciting part of this year's programme. What we're going to be doing, I wanted it to run for the entire festival, but because it's a brand new enterprise and that was a little bit impossible, but what we are going to have are two weekends, one at Hangleton, one at Whitehawk. We've been working with steering committees of community groups that are based in these centres, and they've been talking about, you know, what they would like to have in the centres, and it's been a great experience, I think, for everyone involved to just break some of the ice that exists, you know, in essentially assumptions. People assuming that somebody who lives in Hangleton doesn't want to come to the Brighton Festival. It's ridiculous, you know, of course. Like, so I'm really excited about the programme there. It's all free events, which is great, and lots of really exciting things, workshops, participatory things, also performances. And I'm hoping it's the beginning of a much kind of bigger legacy. That, and I think everyone involved in the Brighton Festival has been like really blown away by the experiences they're having in just talking to a bit of a wider section of the community.
There is an issue that when money is tight, funding is being cut. You know, the NHS is in crisis due to funding cuts, yet there's still money for wars down the back of the sofa. Mysteriously, what is the place for art? Because art does become marginalised, and art seems as a bit of a kind of like a cherry on the top of the cake that isn't really necessary.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, I think it is really necessary. I think it's necessary for our health, you know, for reconnecting us with our own humanity and therefore connecting us more intrinsically with the humanity of other people, which in this time is probably the most important thing that it could be doing, reminding us. Because I think for me, the greatest part of what happens when you go and see music or poetry or dance or whatever it is it's like a reminding. You discover a lot, of course, but also you're reminded of something that you already knew, and it lands you in the company of the others that you shared that experience with, but also out in the world, you know. And so I think that it's extremely important for that reason, but also to have access to creativity, to have access to your own creativity and the creativity of others. It's very important for personal growth, for mental health, for being able to get out some of the things that we carry around that can become too heavy, you know, and can cause problems for us if we don't have an outlet. So some of the problems with it come about when you're with what you expect the art to do or be for it to be understood as successful. This is an issue for us, I think. Like, in other cultures and in other times, the role of art, the role of poetry, was a kind of social role, you know, and it helped us to understand each other, understand ourselves, be together. But now we're asking for it to make us successful or things like this, which is, I think, it kind of inhibits the practice, and also it stops us being able to allow ourselves to enjoy it if we feel we're no good at it. And that's something that I think is important to say, actually, that this idea that you can't play an instrument because you don't know how to, you can't sing because you've got no voice, you can't write because you've never written, this is a strange particular dilemma that's happened to us that didn't used to exist, you know, a couple of generations ago that was not the case here. So I'm adamant that it's extremely important, and actually that we've got a long way to go before we realise actually how important it is in kind of re-establishing some of the connections that have been lost.
There's quite an interesting queer selection in this coming Brighton Festival. How important was that for you to have that element in there?
It's very important, and I think that there was much more that we could have done. It was like, there's always so much more, you know? And actually then what gets through and what fits and what we can make happen is an interesting process, which always feels a bit like, oh, I wish it was, you know, a year-long festival rather than 3 weeks. But yeah, I think it's, for me, Brighton feels miles ahead of other cities that I've known in terms of how it feels for people like me to just walk around in a city like this. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think that without being too kind of patronising or kind of condescending, because you arrive in a place and it's like, oh, Brighton, the queer community, oh, how interesting. Guys, do you want to come and play at this? It's like, just very respectfully, I think it's very important that we include as many voices as we can. But also, I feel pretty confident in the vibrancy of the community here, that, like, I have a lot to learn about what's happening here, you know. And I think Brighton Festival, same. It's like, we've got a lot to learn. And it's about listening as much as it is about offering, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm, like, raging queer, so it's exciting for me to have a few things.
What are you most looking forward to, not only in the festival, but about being in Brighton during festival time?
I think just feeling how it feels here. In the previous years, I've come and performed and then just been and gone, basically. Just come in, done the gig and left because of touring commitments and everything else. So this will be the first time that I've actually, like, spent a bit of time just being around it, you know, like just feeling what it feels like here when the festival's in town.
Any particular performances? Obviously your own ones.
Oh, I don't want to go to them. Sick of them. Like, there's a duo, actually a trio, called Yousef Kamal. Yousef Day is an incredible drummer from South London, where I'm from, and that's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to checking them out. There is a great poetry event with a crew called Lyrics Organics, a poet called Koji Radical. He's fantastic. Toby Thompson, who's a young guy, is great. Loads of spoken word bits, and I'm kind of excited about just being around some of that again, because I started out there and did a lot and then have kind of moved into other areas and just haven't really been to a poetry night for ages. So I'm looking forward to that. There's a guy from Brighton called Tommy Sissons, actually, who's brilliant, and he's performing at the Apples and Snakes poetry night. I think that's going to be amazing. He's a good one. There's loads of stuff. Also, I actually can't wait to go and see something that I would never, ever go and see under normal circumstances, like, you know, dance or circus or some of these things, and checking out lots of events at the community centres as well. Yeah, loads, you know.
How do you think your role in the Brighton Festival may have an impact on you as a person,
you
as an artist, as a performer?
Wow.
I know it's early days yet.
Well, I think that it's given me an interesting perspective on how these kinds of things are made possible and how they're organised, and also in what people seem to have an appetite for. And I feel like there's a kind of feeling in the air for
perspective change,
like across the board. And then when you get involved in an organisation and you realise that that feeling's also there, but it's hard to be the cogs of change in a, but it's possible, you know. And that's been quite an inspiring thing, to think, okay, well, you just need a little catalyst, some kind of spark, and people need to remember how important it is to listen to each other. I think that's something that I'll take away from this, being like, okay, well, that worked there, or that didn't work there, and I wonder what I can do with a bigger, better idea next time, you know. Not that they'll have me back, but...
You're listening to Brighton Festival Show with Melita Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online Monday to Friday during the festival between 5 and 6 and then repeated 10 o'clock and 8 a.m. Thank you very much to our reporters, Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson, and to this week's guests. I'll see you at the same time tomorrow. From me, Melita, thanks a lot. Bye.